care of her. She studied him for a moment, then asked, "Aren't you the only doctor around here?" Doc laughed and looked at Mel. "Smart kid." "She'll surprise you." Doc pinched Little Bit's stomach and said, "Which is why I'm the best," she smiled. "It's time to relieve the watch. Who's coming?" Doc asked. Eric stepped up. "I think it's me and you." Doc stood up and shouldered his bag. "Let's go." As he started to walk off, Sarge grabbed his shoulder and leaned in close. "Let me know if anything changes with the little girl." For all his hard-assed outward appearance, Doc knew he was rather soft inside, especially for kids. He looked at Sarge for a moment, nodded, and walked off. Fred grabbed Eric's hand and gave him a kiss. "Be careful." He smiled.
"I will. We're good."
As they headed to relieve the crew at the barricade, Sarge said,
"I think this is enough for one day. It's getting late, and we have security to pull tonight, so some of you need to get some rest."
"Oh, thank God," Taylor said, as she dropped her shovel.
"I need to check on the garden," Thad said.
"Bobby and Mary should have dinner ready when we get there," Mel said.
"Good. I'm starving," Leanne shouted.
I called Doc and Eric and told them I'd give them a ride up to the barricade. Sarge said he wanted to go as well.
"You going to be there for dinner?" Mel asked.
I nodded.
"Yeah, just going to drop these guys off."
I was turning the truck around when Ted ran up and rolled in through the open window on the back gate. I looked at him in the mirror, shaking my head.
"If there's a hard way to do it, these guys know it."
Rolling up to the barricade, we all got out.
"About damn time. I thought you forgot about us," Ian said.
"Quit your belly aching, Gyrene," Sarge said.
"I'm glad to see you," Jamie said.
"Anything happening up here?" Ted asked.
"Nope, we haven't seen a soul," Perez replied.
"You guys go get some chow," Sarge said.
"Hey, Morgan, can you give us a ride?" Perez asked.
"Go ahead, we'll hang out here for a while," Sarge said.
We loaded up and headed towards the house the three of them were sharing. Jamie said she wanted to change her clothes and rest for a while. Pulling up in the yard, Perez hopped out and said,
"Wait here for a minute,"
and ran towards the house.
"What's he up to?" I asked.
Ian shrugged as he pulled his gear out of the truck.
"Hell if I know."
Jamie said goodbye and headed for the house. Perez came back out carrying a plastic bag and handed it to me through the window.
"Here, this is for Danny. I don't like this stuff."
The bag was heavy. I opened it and looked.
"Holy shit! Where'd you get all this?" I asked,
taking a log of cope out of the bag.
"It was in the camp. Found it when we were pulling out."
Looking at the cans, I asked,
"What in the hell were they doing with this stuff?"
Perez shrugged.
"Hell if I know.
They had all kinds of crazy shit. I think they went out to scavenge early on and took whatever they found."
I looked in the bag. There appeared to be 8 or 9 logs of 5 cans each.
"I'll give him half of it."
Smiling, I looked back up at Perez.
"I like it too. Thanks."
He waved as he walked off.
"Don't worry about it. You're just lucky you don't smoke."
As I pulled out onto the road, I ripped a can from the plastic and ran my fingernail around the lid. Opening it, I took a pinch and put it in my lip. It was a little dry, not too bad, but it was good. I thought about how excited Danny would be on the way to his house. Then I had an idea. When I got to his house, I stuffed the bag under my seat and dropped the can in my pocket as I walked up to the porch. I could hear people out back. A quick look in the window verified that no one was inside, so I walked around the porch. A large pot sat on one of the picnic tables with bowls and silverware laid out. Danny was sitting on a large chaise lounge with Bobby. "Dinner's on the table over there," Bobby said.
Thanks. I'll get some in a minute, I replied, as I stepped over to the screen door and spit. Danny looked at me quizzically. I returned his look with a smile and sat down. He didn't say anything, just looked at me. After a minute, I went back to the door again. This time, he sat up.
What are you doing?
We both know Bobby would have slapped me sideways if I had spit on the porch.
You're damn right I would have, she quickly replied.
Danny looked at her, then at me.
What are you spitting?
Oh. I reached in my pocket and removed the can. Holding it up.
Just this.
Instantly, he was on his feet, moving towards me with his hand out.
Where'd you get that?
A little bird gave it to me, I said, as I tossed him the can. Danny quickly opened the can and took a pinch.
It's a little dry.
Holding my hand out, I replied,
Well, then give it back if you don't like it.
Danny looked at the can.
Oh, I like it.
I smiled.
You can keep it then.
But where'd you get it?
Perez had it.
Got any more? Danny asked.
I smiled. Maybe. If you're nice to me, I'll give you a log.
A log? Sweet! Bobby moaned.
I thought the spit bottles were gone.
Me too, Mel added.
Don't worry. There isn't that much. It won't last long, I replied.
I got rid of the mouthful of worm dirt and sat down to eat. I was hungry.
Sergeant Ted hung out at the barricade for a while, then headed back to their house. As they walked, they talked about the group Ted and Mike had watched a couple of nights before.
What do you think of them? Sarge asked.
They've got someone with some tactical skills. They had watches out, but they're sloppy.
Sarge thought for a moment.
What I can't figure out is why we've only just now come across them.
I thought about that too. How a group that big could be here and us not see them.
But they had several travel trailers, campers, and trucks to pull them. They rode up that day on ATVs, so they've got some fuel.
Maybe they were on the move and just landed here.
Maybe they don't have enough fuel for the trucks and got stuck here, Sarge replied, still thinking.
Might be part of their MO. Move into an area, take what they can, and move on.
That's what I'm worried about. That they're just traveling scavengers.
Ted kicked a rock down the road.
Maybe they'll move on now that they've hit some resistance.
Sarge shook his head.
No, I have a feeling that old Billy boy will want some get even. He didn't strike me as the type to run from a fight.
Maybe we should take another look then. We haven't seen or heard anything out of them since our last trip.
Sarge looked at Ted.
And that really worries me.
I think we'll do that. Go take another look. I'll go with you this time.
Take that sea-going bellhop, too.
I'll come up with a new route. Don't want to go the same way again.
Yeah, they could be expecting us, Sarge smiled. Let's not make it easy on them.
As they came to the door, they heard Mike inside shout,
What the fuck?
They quickly went in, not seeing him, they went through the house.
Mikey? Sarge shouted. Back here!
They found him in the bedroom with the safe, the door standing open, and him in front of it.
Holy shit, you actually got it open! Ted shouted.
Mike turned around, holding a couple of large pictures in his hand.
Look at this shit, he said, handing one of the pictures to Ted. This is what some asshole had in his safe.
I remember this cartoon, Calvin and Hobbes. But why is it in a safe? Ted asked.
Let me see it, Sarge said, taking the picture from Ted.
He studied it for a minute.
It's a signed and numbered lithograph. That's why it's in the safe.
Ted looked at it again.
So?
Are you two really that ignorant? Sarge asked. Both just stared back at him.
In 1992, Bill Watterson took a sabbatical for a year from writing the comic,
He gave these out to newspapers that kept running the series. They're very rare.
Sarge looked past Mike.
What else is in there?
Just a bunch of junk.
Sarge stepped forward.
Get out of the way, dipshit. Let someone with some sense look at it.
Sarge stepped in front of the safe and looked around, having to take out his flashlight to get a better view. He took a bottle of wine from the bottom of the safe and held it up. Reading the label, he whistled.
What's that? Ted asked.
It's a 1945 Chateau Montand Rothschild.
L'année de la victoire, Sarge said, in nearly perfect French.
It's wine. Let's drink it, Mike said, reaching for the bottle. Sarge slapped his hand.
Get your booger pickers off it. This isn't just any wine. This was bottled at the end of World War II. This is a very special wine.
Mike sneered at the bottle.
Still say we should drink it.
Sarge put the bottle back in the safe and continued to poke around. Finding a black leather case, he removed it. Once out, he realized it was a holster. Unsnapping it, he removed a German Luger pistol.
Now we're talking, Ted said.
It's a 41 SS Luger, Sarge said, inspecting the markings.
Cool. Let me have it, Mike said.
The last thing we need is for one of us running around with a damn Nazi Luger. I think we'll leave it here, Sarge said, as he put it back in the safe. Looking back at Mike, he asked,
You know the combination to this thing now?
Yeah, he replied, handing Sarge the piece of paper with the combination. Sarge shut the safe and locked it.
Good. Whoever owned this thing had some interesting tastes.
And collected some weird shit, Ted added.
Mike snorted.
Tell me about it. I was hoping it was full of cool shit, not this crap.
You inbred Neanderthals, this is cool shit. There are some really expensive and rare things in there. This guy was a collector of some sort. There are coins, watches, and all sorts of stuff in here, Sarge shot back.
It may have been valuable at one time, but it ain't worth shit now, Mike replied.
Dinner's ready down the road. Let's go get something to eat, Sarge said, as he headed for the door.
After dinner, Thad went to the garden to tend the plants. He was often there. It relaxed him. He was adjusting the stakes on the tomato plants when Mary walked up.
Can I help?
Sure. Hand me that twine, Thad replied.
Mary handed him the roll and knelt down.
They're getting big, the plants.
Thad smiled. He was proud of the garden.
They sure are. I tend them every day.
Mary held the top of one of the plants so Thad could tie it.
They're so green.
Yeah. Just takes the right fertilizer, some water, and plenty of sun. Lord knows we've got plenty of that lately.
What are you fertilizing them with?
Pig shit. Thad caught himself. I mean, manure.
Mary laughed.
Pig shit is good fertilizer.
Thad laughed, and then took a more serious tone.
You okay?
You don't talk much.
Mary nodded.
I'm getting better. I was shaken up when I got here, but I'm doing better little by little.
Thad cut a piece of twine.
You had a rough time, huh?
She picked up a steak.
Not as bad as Jess.
She looked up at Thad. But she's really strong. I wish I were as strong as her. Thad patted her shoulder.
You'll be all right. You're stronger than you think.
Mary smiled, and they continued to work in the garden, pulling weeds and propping up plants that needed additional support. Thad tended the plants gently. They were important. A food source like this was more valuable than gold at the moment.
I can't wait for this okra to grow out, Thad said.
I like okra. Look, this one has a fruit on it already, Mary replied.
Fried okra is my favorite.
How are we going to fry it? We don't have any shortening.
Thad smiled. I got something better. Hog fat. We butchered a hog and I rendered the fat. We got lots of it. Morgan showed us how to make a flour from kudzu roots, and we can dust them in that and fry them up.
Mary smiled. I can't wait.
Thad looked at the little bud at the base of a flower.
Looks like you're going to have to.
That's all right. It'll be worth it.
Thad stood up.
I think we're done here. Let's head in before the skeeters come out.
They walked back to the house together. As they walked up on the porch, Mel let out a sigh and fell onto one of the picnic tables. Bobby looked over and asked how it went.
Brandy looks fine. I set the food on the porch and backed up into the yard. When she came out to get it, we talked. She said Edie is sick, but not bad. She thinks it's just a cold. Tyler came out and said she was already getting better.
I hope so. I hope everything's okay, Bobby replied.
Me too. But who around here's had a cold? Danny asked.
Mel looked at him.
That's what I was thinking.
Thad let out a loud sigh.
There's nothing in this world I hate more than little ones being sick.
Bobby looked at me.
I guess now I understand why you quarantined them.
I felt horrible. I didn't think it would happen. I shook my head.
Let's hope it's just a cold, and that they'll get better.
Jess came out on the porch, carrying an oil lantern. She set it on one of the tables and sat down. Fred came out and joined her. The two sat there uncomfortably as we talked about the situation across the road. After a moment, I noticed that they seemed out of sorts.
What's eating you two? I asked.
Fred looked at Jess, like she was nervous to speak. Before she could say anything, Sarge, Ted, and Mike came around the porch.
Evening, everyone, Sarge announced.
Mel stood up and walked over to the picnic table where a large pot sat with the night's dinner.
You guys hungry?
She asked as she picked up a bowl.
Mike smiled.
Miss Mel, that's not a question you ever need to ask me. If you got food, just hand it to me.
Mel loaded his bowl with some of the venison stew that was the night's dinner.
Here, Mike.
Sarge stepped up and intercepted the bowl.
Mind your elders, snot-nose.
Mel slapped his hand.
I thought I would faint.
Mind your manners, Linus.
I'd never heard her use his Christian name. Hell, I didn't realize she knew it. Sarge stopped, stunned like a deer in the headlights. Mike smiled broadly and gently took the bowl.
Thank you, Mel.
Sarge stood there for a moment, uncertainly. Now, Linus, would you like a bowl? Mel asked.
Sarge nodded.
Yes, ma'am.
I started to laugh. It was funny. Here was the hardest, crustiest old bastard amongst us being rattled by my wife. It's amazing how a woman can affect a man, as I was about to learn. Mel looked at me, pointing the ladle she was scooping the stew with.
If you know it's good for you, you'll shut up.
I was caught completely off guard. This was the woman I'd known since high school, the one I snuck around with, riding on the back of my motorcycle. I'd known her for nearly 30 years, and yet, at this moment, I didn't know if she was serious or not. So I did what any intelligent man would do. I shut up. Mel filled a bowl for the old man and handed it to him. He looked at her.
Thank you, Miss Mel.
You're welcome, Linus. There's enough for seconds if you want it, she replied. Mel then looked at Ted.
Ted, would you like some?
Ted, probably the smartest man amongst us, smiling and dripping with politeness, replied,
Yes, ma'am, please.
As Sarge walked past me, he winked. I was still confused. Then he took a seat across from Mike. Glancing at Mel as he lowered himself into his seat, he whacked Mike on the knuckles with his spoon. Mike let out a yelp. Sarge quickly jabbed his spoon into his bowl and took a bite.
and with pure innocence in his voice, asked,
"What's the matter, Mikey?"
Mike shook his hand and grinned at the old man.
"Oh, nothing."
He held up his hand as if to inspect it. "I think I got a splinter." Sarge, smiling as he chewed, replied,
"Gotta watch them splinters."
Mel didn't see it. I couldn't imagine how she didn't. I saw it all. Maybe that was it, the difference between men and women. She called him out when he was there in front of her, but now that moment was gone. All I knew was that she had just put the old man in check. I was still amazed, but one thing was for certain. These guys never ceased to crack me up. I noticed Jess fidgeting again and asked what was up. She looked at Fred, and Fred said,
"You guys said you were going to get us a rifle."
I stood up. "Indeed we did. Let's go see what we have." Sarge and the guys followed me into the bedroom, where the weapons from the camp were kept. There was a pile of them. I deferred to Sarge to decide what would be best for the ladies. Sarge picked through the weapons, pulling two ARs from the assortment. They were the ones from the DHS goons killed earlier, and in great condition.
"I think this would be good for you two," Sarge said, inspecting the rifles. "Nearly new, hardly fired, and only drop once."
"Are they French?" I asked.
Sarge laughed. "Tomorrow we'll spend some time at the range to get you up to speed."
Jess took the weapon and looked it over. Mike reached in and grabbed the muzzle of the weapon once when she swept him with it. "Never put anything in front of you that you don't want to destroy." Jess blushed. "Sorry."
"It's okay. You'll learn," Sarge said.
Mike and Ted spent some time going over the controls of the weapons for the girls. They needed some familiarization now since the weapons were going with them tonight. Since they didn't have any training yet, Sarge gave them each one loaded magazine, telling them to not put them in the weapons tonight.
"I'm giving you these because the rifles are useless without them, but I don't want you to put them in your weapon until you've had training. You'll have plenty of opportunity to run and gun."
The girls nodded and promised not to load them. Fred said Eric knew how it worked, and if anything came up, he would take care of them. That was a bit of a relief, knowing he would be there to ensure there were no accidents. Now that arming them was taken care of, everyone started to head to their respective houses. Danny and I were scheduled to relieve the barricade shortly, so I walked Mel and the girls home.
"I want to go fishing tomorrow," Little Bit said, as she followed behind us.
I looked back.
"We don't fish for fun anymore, kiddo. Those fish in the pond are a resource we can't mess with."
"Maybe we could have a fish fry. It would be nice. I think everyone would like the change in menu," Mel said.
"Yeah, a fish fry," Little Bit shouted.
"Can we help catch them?" Taylor asked. I wrapped my arm around her.
"Sure, I think it's a good idea. Fish fry tomorrow."
After getting the girls settled, I kissed Mel and told her I'd be back in a few hours. This time, she didn't resist. She just gave me a hug and told me she'd see me later. It felt good that she was coming to accept the way things were. I found Danny sitting on one of the four-wheelers and hopped on the back. Pulling up to the barricade, I hopped off.
"You guys head back and get some supper."
"Sounds good to me," Jeff said as he climbed on the ATV.
As Doc was about to get on, I stopped him.
"Little Edie is sick."
He paused for a moment. Let's hope it's nothing serious.
"What do you really think?" Danny asked.
"We'll just have to wait and see. Too early to know yet," Doc replied. "In the morning, I'll go over and check on her, but there isn't much I can do for her."
"Well, let me know what you think after you see her," I said.
He nodded and mounted the machine. Jeff started it up, and they headed down the road.
"Well, here we are again," Danny said, as he rested on the barricade.
I joined him.
Yeah, kind of like Groundhog Day, huh?
Danny nodded. After a moment, he said, But it isn't bad. I kind of like it. We hung out for a couple of hours, talking a little and walking out to the road to scan it in both directions. As usual, it was quiet, nothing happening. I was out in the road looking up at the sky with the NVGs, looking for satellites. It was something I used to do with the girls, a game of sorts. It always amazed me how fast you could find one. One time we spotted the International Space Station. It's the only thing up there that big. It was so bright and moving incredibly fast, so we couldn't see it for long. But the girls got a kick out of it, nonetheless. I lowered the device and scanned the field across the road, and once again saw the small light. I took a look without the aid of the device and couldn't see it. Lowering the device, I looked again and saw it. This time, though, it appeared it was coming across the field, towards us. "Hey, man, come out here," I called to Danny. Danny came out, and I handed him the tube. "Take a look out there. See the light?" Danny looked across the field. "Yeah. Looks like he's out in the middle of the field this time." "That's what I thought. Almost like he's coming straight at us." Danny watched the light for a moment. "Sure does. He isn't very stealthy about it. He's right out in the open." "Maybe he's not hiding." Danny handed me the device back. "Maybe he doesn't know we have NVGs. Let's keep an eye on him and see what he does." We walked back to the barricade and settled in to wait. From time to time, we would check on the progress of whoever was out there. Each time, he was closer. It didn't take long for him to close the distance to us, and he was standing in the field just on the other side of the fence from us. "He's just across the fence," I said. "What's he doing?" I handed Danny the tube. "He just squatted down, just sitting there." Danny took a look. "Well, this should be interesting." He was less than 100 yards from us. He'd done nothing to this point to give any indications of hostility. However, it was a little unsettling to have him just sitting there watching us. "He has to know we can see him," Danny said. Looking through the tube at him, I replied, "I would think so." Just as I said that, the man across the road rose to his feet and started towards the fence. "Here he comes." I watched as he slipped through the strands of wire, rather quietly, I noted. As he approached the pavement, I leaned over to Danny. "He's getting closer now. When I give the signal, let's light him up. It'll wash out his NVGs. Let's see what he does." We rose to our feet, and just as he was walking onto the road, I said, "Now." We both turned on the lights mounted on our carbines. The intense LED lights caused the man to stop and raise his hand to shield his eyes. Reaching up, he removed the NVGs from his head, still shielding his eyes with the other hand. In the light, we could see his weapon was slung over his shoulder and his hands empty, except for the goggle.
"Damn, that's bright!"
the stranger called out.
"What do you want?" I asked. "Those lights out of my eyes, for starters. That'd be great."
We lowered the lights from his eyes a bit, but kept him lit up.
"Thanks. Those things are bright as hell. Now what do you want?" "I've been watching you guys, and just wanted to drop in and let you know I wasn't a threat. I've been in the area for some time."
"We've seen your lights a few times, but what makes you think coming up here in the middle of the night is such a good idea?" Danny asked.
He shrugged.
"I don't move during the day if I can avoid it. I prefer to lay low and try to stay out of sight."
"Why? Who you hiding from?" I asked.
The man laughed.
"Hell, everyone. You been out lately?"
"Yeah, we get around."
The man nodded.
"Yeah. You guys have four-wheelers and trucks. I've seen them.
He paused for a moment and pointed to the water jug.
Is there water in that?
I nodded.
Would you mind?
Sure. Come on up. Just keep that rifle slung. He raised his hands.
I'm not looking for trouble. I knew you guys have night vision equipment. That's why I walked straight in like I did, so you could see me.
He came up and filled a stainless water bottle from the jug and quickly drained it.
I was looking him over, trying to get a sense of him.
The bottle he held was blackened from countless fires from the looks of it. He carried an AK and wore a chest rig full of magazines high on his chest. He was tall and struck a rather intimidating appearance. Strapped to his hip was what looked like a Glock of some variation, and the handle of a large knife jutted out in front of him. On his back hung a small pack. From the way it sagged, it was obviously heavy. He refilled his bottle and took a seat on the barricade.
So what made you come out here tonight?
Why now if you've been around for so long? Danny said. He looked back over his shoulder.
I got pushed out. There's a large group moving around out there. I bumped into a couple of them last night, and they weren't particularly friendly.
We didn't hear any shooting. What happened? Danny asked.
He shook his head. There was no shooting. I handled it quietly.
With that? I asked, pointing to the knife. He quickly drew what turned out to be a kukri and held it up.
No, I was actually taking a shit when they showed up. I had my e-tool out to dig a cat hole, so I cleaved his head in half with it.
With an e-tool? I asked. He dropped his pack and pulled a short shovel out. It had a wooden handle and a small spade head. I recognized it as a Spetsnaz shovel.
Yeah, they have a lot more uses than digging.
He twirled the tool in his hand.
I dig with it, chop and cut. Hell, I've even cooked on it.
He looked up.
Makes a hell of a frying pan in a pinch.
What's your name? Danny asked. He rose to his feet and with a powerful swing, slammed the e-tool into the top log of the barricade, where it sank a full 2 inches into the pine.
Name's Dalton. What's yours?
I'm Danny. This is Morgan.
Ah, Captain Morgan. I've sailed with him in the past. He took me to places I don't remember on adventures I can't recall.
He paused for a moment in deep thought.
Come to think of it, those weren't very good times.
He looked up and smiled.
And that's why I don't drink anymore.
Danny and I both glanced at one another. I, for one, had no idea what the hell he was talking about. Danny just shrugged.
I guess none of us drinks much anymore, I replied. I quit long ago. Wasn't good for me, or anyone around me, for that matter.
What's your plan? I asked. Dalton looked around.
You guys keep a constant guard up here, right?
I nodded.
Yeah.
Would you mind if I crashed up here for the night? I really need some good sleep.
I certainly wasn't expecting that. I figured he might ask for food or something, not to sleep.
I looked at Danny, and he was obviously just as perplexed as I was.
As I'm sure you can relate, that seems a little strange, I replied.
He nodded.
I know, but I think I can close my eyes here. There are two of you, and you haven't tried anything yet.
He looked me over for a minute, then pointed.
What's with the stars?
It's a long story, but I'm kind of the sheriff around here.
Dalton smiled.
Well, that's even better then. If you're the law, then I know I can trust you.
The question is, can we trust you? Danny said.
Dalton cocked his head to the side.
I'm going to be asleep. If anyone is vulnerable, it's me.
Or you could be part of a group we're having issues with, I fired back.
It had suddenly come to me that he could be one of Billy's boys sent to gather some intel. Or maybe to try and get on the inside and cause some trouble. You mean that group that was back over there? Dalton asked, pointing to the southwest.
What do you mean, was? I asked.
Just that. Was. They moved.
Is that who you bumped into? Danny asked.
Dalton nodded.
Yeah. They moved out into pasture land over there. They're holed up back in a little swamp. They got a lot of people, vehicles and dogs. Dogs are a problem, see? They can smell and see you before you do them. Hard to deal with dogs, but there are ways.
I'm going to lay it out for you. We have no way of knowing who you are. You could be part of that group, and that would be a problem.
Dalton removed his boonie hat and scratched at his head.
I can see your conundrum. How about I give you guys my weapons? I want to sleep right here, not looking to go into your neighborhood.
I thought about it for a minute and looked at Danny.
What do you think?
If he's unarmed, I don't see an issue with it.
Looking back at Dalton, I said, All right. If you're willing to do that, you can crash here.
Smashing! Dalton shouted. Where do you want me to put my gear? I just need to get my sleeping gear out.
Go ahead and get that. Then we'll secure your stuff.
Dalton removed a bivy bag and a poncho liner from his pack and tucked his water bottle under his arm.
This is all I need.
Just leave your stuff right there. You can sack out over here, I said, pointing to a spot under the brush on the side of the road.
Dalton laid his sleeping gear out and quickly got in the bag. Without saying anything else, he disappeared into the bag, pulling the poncho liner up to cover his face.
Danny and I moved up to the barricade and set Dalton's gear off to the side. He'd laid his pistol on the top log, so I dropped it into his pack and zipped it up.
Danny picked up the AK and removed the magazine, then ejected the chambered round.
Once the weapon was secure, he placed it on the pack. In quiet voices, we talked about our guest.
What do you make of him? I asked.
Danny half shook his head.
Hard to tell. Seems a little weird to me.
Glancing back at the sack, I said, He's definitely different.
About an hour later, Thad and Mike showed up to relieve us. We shared the story of our visitor, pointing out his sleeping form. Danny showed them where his gear was stashed.
Well, you certainly don't see that every day, Mike said.
Thad was looking at the bag.
You trust him?
I shrugged.
He hasn't done anything, and he gave up his weapons.
Mike wrinkled his nose.
He been snoring like that long?
I chuckled. Yeah. Almost as soon as the sound of the zipper stopped, that racket started.
He sure sounds like he needed some sleep, Thad added.
Looking at Mike, I said, He also said Billy's group has moved. At least I assume it's Billy's.
Really? We were just talking about taking another look at them. I was worried they would bug out.
We'll talk to him tomorrow. I think he knows where they are.
Danny stretched.
You ready to go? I'm tired.
Yeah, man. Let's go.
Mike looked back at Dalton.
Don't worry. We'll keep an eye on him.
It's all good. See you guys later,
Danny said, as he climbed up behind me on the ATV.
Danny dropped me off at my place, then headed home.
Meathead came running out of the darkness, barking, until he realized it was me.
He came up and nuzzled my hand, so I patted him on the head.
I didn't see Drake. A black dog at night is kinda hard to see.
I realized he was there when I tripped over him.
Turning on the light on my weapon, I saw him raise his head. He didn't even bother getting up.
Sorry, Drake, I said, as he laid his head down.
Little girl was lying on the porch. She never bothered to get up either.
I looked down at her.
Lot of good you are.
Her tail thumped the porch in reply. Going in, I took my gear off and headed for bed. I was tired.
Chapter 8. I woke up before Mel or the girls. The house was quiet. I was still getting used to the silence. It actually bothered me. As a product of the modern age, I wasn't accustomed to it. It had taken months for me to be able to go to sleep without the white noise of a fan in the room. Not to mention having tinnitus didn't help. My ears rang constantly. Trying to keep quiet, I dressed and slipped out to the kitchen in bare feet. I poured myself a glass of tea and sat on the couch to put my socks on. Outside, a heavy dew settled on everything, driving the dogs to the porch. I found them there sprawled out when I went out to put my boots on. They seemed even lazier, if that were possible. Drake lifted his head to look at me, while Meathead and Little Girl just raised their eyes a bit at the sound of the door.
"Look at you lazy asses," I said, pulling the leg of my pants over the boots. "You guys are worthless."
They replied by drumming their tails on the porch, and it brought a smile to my face. If only my life were so easy. Crossing the fence to Danny's, the light breeze that had picked up brought the undeniable odor of decomposition to my nose. I walked over to the chicken feeder and checked it out. I had not done that since it was installed. The ground below it was alive with maggots, and checking inside revealed many more. More for fun than anything else, I went to the coop and released the birds. There were many eggs in the laying boxes, but I left them for a little bit together. It was one of her chores to check for eggs. The birds ran in the direction of the feeder. I guess they knew where their breakfast was. I watched and laughed to myself as they made short work of the grubs in the ground. The chickens had no idea where the grubs came from, that the source was hanging just over their heads. I was about to climb onto one of the four-wheelers to go to the barricade, but decided to walk. It was still cool out, and we really needed to be conserving our gas. Passing Tyler's house, I stopped and waited for Doc, who was coming down their drive.
"What's the verdict on Edie?" I asked.
"She's definitely sick."
"Damn."
Doc stopped. "But it gets worse. So are Tyler and Brandy." I was stunned.
"What?
Mel didn't say anything about them." "They're trying to hide it, but both of them have fevers. Sweat was beating up in their foreheads, and both were coughing. They said it was allergies, but I know better." This wasn't good. The last thing I wanted was for anyone here to come down with a cold, let alone TB. "There isn't much we can do for them, is there?" I asked. Doc shook his head.
"No. Some people beat it."
He paused and looked me in the eye.
"But most don't."
I nodded.
"Kinda what I figured."
Doc looked around.
"Where are you headed?"
"Up to the barricade. We've got a guest up there."
Doc raised his eyebrows.
"Really? Who?" I shrugged.
"Don't really know much about him, except his name is Dalton.
He showed up last night and asked if he could sleep up at the barricade. Said he was tired."
"Sounds a little shady to me."
"That's what we thought. But he gave up his weapons and crawled into his sleeping bag and went to sleep."
"Well, let's go check him out," Doc said, as he headed up the road.
I looked at the bunker project as we passed it. We'd be back to work on that today once everyone was up and going. Sarge was of the opinion that it was really needed, or would be. We stopped for a moment and talked about it. Doc said they were trained on constructing such emplacements since sandbags weren't always available. I asked if they would be sufficient.
"As long as they don't have rocket launchers."
I looked down at the earth and log structure. Great. Doc slapped me on the back. Don't worry. They don't have that kind of shit. I sure as hell hope not.
When we got to the barricade, Sarge was there with Ian and Jamie. Thad and Mike were still there as well. I could see Dalton was still in his bag, and Sarge was eyeing him with suspicion. As I walked up, he pointed to Dalton's prone form.
What the hell's the idea of this?
I shrugged. He didn't seem like he was a threat. I looked over. Hell, he's still asleep.
No, I'm not, Dalton said as he sat up, pulling the poncho liner from his face. Well, good morning, sunshine, Sarge said with a smile.
Dalton took in the group as he scratched his head.
Damn, did it rain last night? You guys multiply faster than gremlins.
He extracted himself from the bag and stood up, stretching and groaning.
That's the best damn sleep I've had in forever. Thanks.
Not a problem, I replied. I did a round of introductions. Sarge shook his hand and gave a quick nod. Once everyone knew who everyone was, I told Sarge what Dalton had said about Billy's group. Sarge listened, then asked,
You know where they are now?
Dalton was filling his water bottle and replied,
Yeah. They're out there in ranch land, holed up in a big swamp.
He took a long drink from the bottle.
It's like they're expecting a fight. They should be, sooner or later, Sarge snorted.
You had a run-in with them? Mike asked.
Yeah, part of the reason I came up here. I've been living out there for weeks. It was good for a while. Plenty to eat, plenty of water, and no one around.
Then they moved in and started sending out patrols. I ran into one of the patrols. Actually, they ran into me.
What happened? Sarge asked.
Dalton shrugged.
I split one of them's head open and got away. I'm not much for the whole group dynamic. I prefer to work alone.
Hard way to live. Man's got to sleep at some point, Sarge replied.
Which is why I'm here. I didn't say it was the best way to be, just the way it is.
Could you show us where they are? Mike asked.
Dalton nodded. Sure, I don't think they're going anywhere.
All right, we'll discuss this later. Let's go get some breakfast, Sarge said.
Dalton perked up.
Breakfast?
Yeah, come on. We'll feed you too, I said.
He clapped his hands.
All right.
But you have to work for it. We have a little project we're working on that you can help us with, Sarge added.
Fine by me. I'm not scared of hard work.
Mike chuckled.
Neither is the old man. He'll lie down and go sound asleep right beside it.
Sarge looked at Dalton.
Ignore him. He was kicked in the head by a mule when he was young.
Yeah, he was trying to milk it, Ian shouted.
Dalton laughed. I like you guys. You're my kind of people.
I picked up his pack and rifle and handed them to him. Here, take these with you.
Dalton nodded and slung one over each shoulder.
I wasn't worried about him at this point. Besides, there were more of us than him. Ian and Jamie were there to relieve Mike and Thad, so they walked with us. As we passed the bunker, Dalton asked if it was the project Sarge mentioned. We stopped for a moment to show him what we were doing and told him why.
Can't say I blame you. Looks pretty sturdy.
I only had one run-in with them, but I watched them for quite some time, Dalton said.
What was your impression? Mike asked.
Dalton thought about that question for a minute.
They're a pretty big group with a lot of shit. They've got dogs that, from what I can see, are there for no purpose other than as an alarm system. But they move like a horde with little discipline. They seem to think they're safe simply because of their numbers.
Would you take them on? Sarge asked.
Dalton smiled. It was a sadistic look.
I could take them all on if I were so inclined and wanted to devote some time to it. I like to hunt men. One at a time, they would fall, quietly, and when they didn't suspect it. Mike laughed a movie bad guy laugh. I like this guy. Dalton smiled and contorted his face into a hilarious bad guy display. I like you too. He wagged his eyebrows up and down to emphasize it. Mike laughed uproariously. Sarge shook his head.
Just what I fucking need.
And he started down the road towards Danny's house. I turned into my driveway to check on Mel and the girls, letting the rest of the group continue to Danny's. The dogs came trotting up and followed me to the house. Opening the front door, I called out, "Hello?" Taylor came around the corner, rubbing her head with a towel. "Mom's at Bobby's house." I stepped in.
"What are you doing here?"
"I wanted to take a shower. The water's cold," she said with a smile. "But it feels good, doesn't it?" I smiled back. She smiled. "Yeah." "You coming over for breakfast?" She nodded. "Yeah, soon as I get dressed, I'll be over." I nodded and started to leave, but turned back. "How are you feeling?" "I know a lot has happened lately. How are you doing?" She looked at me. "I'm good, Dad. Doc talked to me. He's really nice. I did what I had to do, and I'm good with that now. It's not what I wanted to do, and I don't want to have to do it again, but I will if I have to." She paused for a moment, and I could see she was looking for the right words. "It's just so different now. I was thinking about college before, or maybe about getting a job. Now, I have to think about hunting, taking care of my sisters, and defending them." She leaned against the wall. "But I actually like it. We're all together now. You don't have to go to work anymore. Now we concentrate on things that matter. I mean, I wish this hadn't happened, but I'm good with it now. I'm happy." I smiled and walked over and wrapped my arms around her. "You have no idea how happy I am to hear you say that." She hugged me tightly. "I love you, Dad." I kissed the top of her head. "I love you too. Hurry up and get you some breakfast." I left her to get dressed and headed outside. The dogs once again followed me as I walked towards Danny's. I was uplifted, though. That little talk with Taylor really affected me. To know she was going to be all right, that her head was in the right place, it lifted a weight from me. Rounding the corner at Danny's, I heard laughter, a lot of laughter. Everyone was on the back porch, and I could hear Dalton's voice. From the sound of things, he was entertaining the group.
"Coming up on the porch, I saw Dalton sitting at one of the picnic tables, with everyone sitting around talking. Finding Mel and the girls, I sat down with them."
Bobby and Miss Kay came out of the house with a large skillet of scrambled eggs and set them out. Dalton looked at the pan. "Are those real eggs?"
"Yes, sir, fresh from the chickens," Kay said, as she scooped some onto a plate and handed it to Jess.
Each time she loaded a plate, Dalton's eyes were glued to it as it passed before him. Kay naturally served the women and girls first, as it should be. But Dalton did get the first plate after them. Closing his eyes, he held it up to his nose and inhaled deeply.
"Man, that smells good. The last time I had eggs was in the spring, when I found a sandhill crane nest."
He scooped a bite into his mouth. His body went limp as he chewed.
"Oh, man, that's good,"
getting a chuckle out of everyone. Kay smiled.
"I'll take that as a compliment."
"It is. From the bottom of my heart, it is," Dalton replied as he took another bite.
Mel leaned over as we ate and whispered,
"Who is he?"
"He came up last night. Seems like a decent guy."
"Is he going to stay here?"
I shrugged. "Dunno. We'll see."
As we ate,
We discussed the day's activities. There was a lot of work to be done. Fortunately, we had enough bodies to tackle it. Sarge wanted a patrol to go out. It would be him, Mike, and Ted. The rest of us were going to work on the bunker. The design was well understood at this point, and we hoped to finish it today. The addition of Dalton would certainly help. Once everyone was fed, we got things ready for the day. Thad brought in one of the water jugs and put what ice we had in it. The hand tools were being gathered and loaded into the Suburban. Danny was checking out the chains on the saws, and I was dragging out a wheelbarrow when Kay came up. "Morgan, we have a bunch of eggs, too many. Do you think you could go trade some with those people down the road for some vegetables?"
"Yeah, I'm sure they'd like them."
"I'll go get them for you. It would be nice to have some fresh veggies." After shoving the wheelbarrow in the back of the truck, I went inside. Kay had a basket full of eggs. I had no idea the chickens were so productive.
"Wow.
How many do we have left?" I asked.
"Several dozen. I'm just worried they're going to spoil."
Picking one up, I noted, "We could always preserve them."
"How are we going to do that?" Bobby asked from the sink.
"I know there's some mineral oil around here somewhere. All you have to do is wipe them with oil. Covering the shell completely prevents them from spoiling. They'll last a long time."
Kay leaned against the bar and crossed her arms.
"I've never heard that. You sure it works?"
Nodding, I replied,
"Oh, sure. The other way is to use this stuff called sodium silicate, commonly called water glass, but we don't have any of that. The mineral oil will work just fine."
Kay looked at the basket. "In that case, I'll take some of these out. There will still be plenty to trade, but if we can store them, we can certainly use them."
Kay took a couple dozen out of the basket. Bobby said she had some mineral oil, and they would coat the eggs with it. I took the basket out to the truck and set it in the front seat. Everyone was already walking down to the bunker. Mel and the girls waited for me. As I got in the truck, Little Bit asked if she could drive.
"I think you'll still fit. Climb up here," I said, patting my lap.
She quickly stomped her way into my lap. Amazing how kids always manage to step in the one place you don't want them to. I steered us out the gate and let her take over. As we passed those walking, she was sure to honk and wave, making sure everyone saw her driving. Once everyone arrived, we got to work. I was hoping we could finish this project today. All we had to do was roof the structure. With the center load-bearing poles in place, we laid logs across them that spanned the width of the bunker. With the ends resting on the outer walls and center supported, the basic structural foundation was complete. We then started covering the top with more logs.
"We're going to need more," Thad said, as he rolled the end of a log into place.
Danny, Thad, and Dalton volunteered to go with him to cut more, and they headed off with the tractor. While they were gone, the rest of us put the last logs we had in place and took a break. I just sat back against the wall of the bunker when Jess asked, "Are we going to get some weapons training in today?"
"I'm sure you will. We're almost done with this. When they get the next load here, that should do it."
I looked up at the logs over my head. "I've been thinking about the roof. I want to spread some plastic out on it and cover it with dirt to keep the rain out."
"Good idea. I was thinking the same thing," Jeff said.
Leanne and Taylor were sitting in opposite corners of the bunker, asleep. I envied them. Teenagers could fall asleep anywhere. I remember those days of falling asleep in class. Man, I missed that. I decided to try and speed the process up.
"Hey, Jeff, want to help me spread the plastic on what we've already got down? We could even start piling the dirt on."
Jeff jumped up.
"Yeah, let's do it."
Everyone except the two sleeping princesses pitched in as well. Fred, Jess, and Eric spread the plastic while I started shoveling dirt into the barrow. Jeff moved some dirt to create a ramp on one side of the bunker so we could get it to the top. It took a couple of loads dumped there as well, but we finally had a ramp to the top. After several back-and-forth rolls to compact the loose dirt, we were able to roll it up to the roof and start dumping. We set up a pretty good system. With Mel helping me fill the barrow, Jeff would roll it up and dump, and Jess's crew would spread it out. It didn't take long to cover the portion of the roof that was ready. Once we'd done all we could there, we started working on the sides. I wanted to pile as much dirt as we could against the walls. It would help hide it in a way, and increase the ballistic protection some. We were working on the front, packing dirt and pieces of wood around the viewports, when Thad showed up with more logs.
"You guys got a lot done," he shouted.
"We're working on it," I replied.